Hi guys, welcome back to the 9th episode of the Untitled Gadget Podcast. And it's Sunday evening. We've been a little late with our recordings because everything's running a little late with the lockdown going on. That also means that news is a little not as exciting and there's not that many devices going around. So we'll see what we've got up for this episode. This is your host, Dhruv, for this week. And we've got Akshay and Harish, your other hosts, for the Untitled Gadget Podcast, and let's go. So, Harish, do you want to clue us in on what's been going on in the world of smartphones this week?
Yeah, not a lot going on, as you said, but OnePlus is getting ready to launch its phones on April 14th. So it's doing what it usually does and building hype for its products. And then we also get a lot of leaks. So this week we got confirmation on more features, and the fact that we may get to see, well, two devices, not just one. And it looks like they're turning out to be very interesting phones. But what may be particularly worrisome is that they may also be very costly phones. And it'll be an interesting strategy to see if they can maintain that value core that they've position for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, right?
So Harish, before we move on to that, and I think you've raised a very good topic there, have you heard anything about that supposed third phone? You know, there was these rumors going around about a budget OnePlus. Like, has there been anything more on that?
I know, right? That built so much momentum and then it just leveled off. It was meant to be called the OnePlus Z, and there were leaks that it would be powered by a MediaTek Dimensity chipset. That in itself was like a big deal because OnePlus doesn't usually go for anything other than the best that Qualcomm has to offer. So for now, it doesn't look like it will launch, but we don't know. We still have a few days to go until the official unveil to find out, but at this point, it looks like it's just going to get the 8 and 8 Pro.
I have a feeling they might launch this once this lockdown and everything gets over, especially in India, because I think that's a budget phone, right? If we are not mistaken. And
yeah.
I think they'll want to have inventory prepared for once all this other situation around the world is improved. I think just having those phones sit in their warehouses won't make any sense. So I think they may have pushed that launch. Never know.
What are the chances of this being, you know, like a regional device of sorts? You know, it might just launch in India and China, perhaps. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Based on what we've heard so far, it is entirely possible that it'll be limited to this region, Asia. We've seen them do that in the past as well. The OnePlus 7 was just marketed in a few regions. It never showed up in the US. So it is likely that they're trying to focus on a few markets, and based on the situation here, it makes sense for them to push that launch.
Yeah. So Akshay, like, what's got you excited about the OnePlus? Like, I know we're all, we shouldn't, but we're all big fans of the OnePlus phones here, to the point that we've unofficially called ourselves the OnePlus Gadget Podcast as well at times. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, what are you guys excited about?
To be honest, I think it's like beating the drum all over again. I just want the cameras to be good. I think I have enough confidence in OnePlus that the design is going to be on point. I feel the fast charging is going to be on point. I feel that the software is going to be on point. I think wireless charging is there. Sure, it wasn't required. I like wireless charging. The fact that they've included it in one of their phones, that's also awesome. They've got everything covered, but the only thing that disappoints me, not really disappoint, but something that I really want them to improve upon, is the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can just improve the primary camera, I don't even give a damn about the rest of the sensors, but the primary camera, if it's good enough to just click decent images, I think that's the phone. That'll make it the ultimate phone to
own.
So
while we're still on that point, while we haven't seen anything about the primary camera, OnePlus tweeted out an image from the ultra-wide camera recently. And they're touting some big gains on that. Evidently, it's got a higher resolution and, the color accuracy and everything else, like brighter images in low light as well. That's something that OnePlus talked about this week. It had kind of slipped my mind earlier. What do you guys think about that? Like, you know, there's also like, I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself, but there are also like multiple arguments that that night image doesn't actually look like a night image at all. So what do you guys think about that?
That's a big change for them, right? Because when they rolled out the ultra-wide cameras last year, they were lackluster to say the least. I mean, color balance was way off and images looked washed out. And they said they were a focus for them was tweaking that. And it looks like they've managed to pull it off to some extent. I mean, in general, ultra-wide lenses look much better this year because even on the Galaxy S20, there's not that much of a differential between the primary and the wide-angle lens mm-hmm. this time around. So I think we're getting to that point where these cameras are on the same level as the primary lens. And that's good to see.
I think last year, OnePlus probably didn't take the ultra-wide sensor too seriously. And then we saw 2019 with every flagship phone having an ultra-wide sensor and good ultra-wide sensors.
The Pixel 4.
Yeah, well, that didn't come to India. Pixel 4 does not exist. But everything else, you know, like from the S20 to the iPhone to the Note 10, all of them have great ultra-wide sensors, you know, arguably one of the best in each phone. And then we saw the P40 as well. So I think this year they're taking the ultra-wide sensor seriously, and they've probably improved upon on the software front a lot for that phone. And they probably might trickle down the same features for OnePlus 7 and 7T as well, but maybe at a later date. So I think they just realized that, you know, ultra-wide is a sensor that everyone loves to have. I love it as well. I'm pretty sure the two of you like it as well. And I think they have just improved upon that mantra and just probably went fully on board with that sensor.
Yeah, we saw this last year, right? When we all went to the camera lab in Taiwan, they finally set that up last year and they said that it would take a year to 18 months for us to see the results of that because they were just setting it up at that time. So I think with the 8 series, they'll really showcase camera as finally being a differentiator because they've been able to get that up and running and put in some work.
I think they've known that themselves, that, you know, OnePlus is the camera department is probably the weakest department for OnePlus in all their phones. And that's probably the reason why they set up the camera R&D center in Taiwan, where we all three of us went to. So I think we might just see some fruition from their work. from their work at that center in Taiwan.
I could do with some fresh fruit right now.
Yeah, I want some kiwi. I think I was thinking about kiwi. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. Oh, the things that you miss out on.
Yeah. But the one feature that they highlighted this week was wireless charging. They showed off this custom stand that they were rolling out with the device, and it's able to do 30 watt wireless charging. And it kind of looks like the Pixel stand, only thicker. But it needs to be because they're introducing this crazy 30 watts wireless charging, and that's like double what the S20 offers. So it's a big leap in terms of technology. And they also did like a deep dive on it to break into how it actually works. They're using Qi as a standard, but they've got a lot of their own secret sauce going on to boost that speed to 30 watts. And the best part about it is that if you put any other phone on it that's not a OnePlus, you'll be able to still charge it at like 10 watts or whatever. And then if you have a Qi charger already in your house, you can use that to charge the OnePlus at like 10 watts. So in that way, it's compatible with other devices. But if you use the OnePlus charger with the OnePlus, you get 30 watts.
Yeah, we predicted this. I think 3 weeks ago.
We
when
did.
Vivo came out.
But we were also skeptical if it's actually going to have 30 watt charging.
So. I was actually quite confident at that time when Vivo showed off their 30 watt wireless charger. I was like, if Vivo has it, it means OnePlus is going to get it for sure because everything trickles down. I mentioned that episode as well. So yeah. We kind of expected that. And I mean, Oppo is leading the charge in fast charging, and I think they're just distributing it to their various companies at BBK and. OnePlus is just happens to be one of them. I think I won't be surprised if it's just another form of Oppo while VOOC charging that has been licensed to OnePlus.
Yeah, they're calling this wireless. Wait, what charge 30? Damn,
WAP,
I forgot
WAP,
the name.
WAP, 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 WAP wireless 30 charge, blah blah. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's some derivation of
wireless warp charge. It should have been called wireless warp.
And I think it's got like a fan in it. I think I saw an image floating around to keep the phone cool.
I mean, it has to. That's what it is. I think it's like several coils bundled together.
Yeah.
But it is interesting tech. And yeah, I like that they're going in this direction.
It's like
that was one of the features that they were missing out on.
It's like the Xiaomi wireless charger they showed off. I think that was 40 watts and that also had fans inbuilt into it. Remember that YouTube video that uploaded?
Hey, actually, like our... Xiaomi car, the wireless car charger also has a fan built into it.
I mean, wait, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
What? Oh, you mean the mount? I was like, Xiaomi made a car and I don't know about
car charger. the wireless
charger. But it's like Xiaomi made a car and I don't have it. That's more appropriate for
it. I need that. I wanted to get the scooter, but then I realized, I mean, it will be pointless in India because I'll go over one pothole and either it'll break or my back will. So I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, well, there's a higher chance of that breaking than your back.
I was looking at boosted boards, but then it's the same thing. So
yeah, same problem.
But coming back to OnePlus though, like, you think wireless charging is a required feature that, or will it bring up the cost too much?
But that's the thing, right? It'll add cost to the phone itself. And then just based on how bulky this looks, it doesn't look like it'll be bundled with the phone. So that'll be another, I don't know how much, $50, $60, $100 for this charger.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's going to be quite a costly deal.
We did. Speaking of costly, there was a leak of the prices of the OnePlus 8 series. And it was and most of the times, WinFuture, that was the website, they're 99% accurate with their leaks.
Yeah.
And if those prices are true, that's fucking ridiculous for OnePlus.
Ronald has great contacts with the German retailer industry.
900 euros, right?
Yeah.
But okay, that's actually the next point that I was about to come to. Okay. So, actually, like you said, that there is a tentative price point that's been leaked already. That puts this squarely in an expensive phone category. It's still cheaper than some of the other phones out there. But it is no longer, you know, an affordable phone for sure for a lot of people. There's two aspects to this. One, you are getting a lot for your money. People have been clamoring for IP ratings. They're possibly getting that. That's what the rumors suggest. People have wanted wireless charging. Now, you're not only getting regular wireless charging, you're getting fast wireless charging. And if the cameras are up to snuff, then, you know, you're getting a pretty damn good imaging experience as well. Why are we scoffing at the price point? This is as much of a flagship as any other phone.
But it's not only the Pro model. I can understand Pro model having all the bells and whistles and being costly. The OnePlus 8, if you believe the rumor, the starting price is 719 euros. That's around 59,000 bucks for OnePlus 8. I'm not even talking about the Pro variant right now.
Well, yeah, you make a good point there again. But then, Harish, like, why don't you clue us in on this? You know, how much of the blame is on OnePlus and how much of it is on Qualcomm?
See, I actually have a decent idea about this because I ended up looking at all 18 of their phones earlier this week. So I know how they've trended upward over the last 6 years. And traditionally, every year, with every generation rather, every 6 months, they tend to increase the cost of their phones by $30, $40. And we've been conditioned to that. And that is the way the industry is also moving. For sure, there is a Qualcomm tax because to get the latest and greatest silicon from Qualcomm, brands have to pay more because now it's at a point where all of these 2020 designs come with 5G modems. So there's no way of getting the latest silicon without getting a 5G modem. And not only are brands paying for the latest silicon, they're also paying extra for that 5G modem. And that is making something that was already costly even more costly for brands. So there's no way for them to get around that issue other than paying Qualcomm. And where do those costs go? They get passed down to consumers, because we end up having to pay more. And is that wise? I don't know, but it clearly seems to have paid off for them with the 7 Pro. It did reasonably well in terms of sales. And you're right, it's no longer the value flagship. It is a true flagship. I mean, it will be judged against the Galaxy S20 because that's what it has to beat now, because this phone is, for all intents and purposes, OnePlus' take on the Galaxy S20. So it needs to measure up to the S20, and if it is found in any way lacking to that, it's not going to do so well.
Here's my question though, like, I know Qualcomm is the first person we think about when, you know, there's a rise in cost, but, you know, being a BBK brand, we've seen two phones from the same parent company by Realme and IQ with the same chipset, with the same 5G antennas and modems, right? Now, their cost is incredibly low. And if I'm not wrong, BBK may have bought the 865 chipsets in bulk so that they can use it in Oppo, Vivo, Realme, IQ, and now OnePlus. That's the fifth brand they will be using those chipsets for.
Yeah.
And going by IQ, a relatively new brand, having a very affordable price with that same chipset. Similarly, Realme with the X50 Pro, and now we have the OnePlus. There's a huge disparity between the three phones, and they're from all three phones are from the same group. So I think there's putting the extra price on just because it has the latest Qualcomm chipset doesn't make sense to me, because the two other phones from the same group that costs considerably less.
You're right, but then there's also the fact to consider that Realme and IQ are still in what is effectively customer acquisition stage. They are not focusing on profits or sales or revenue. Well, they're focused on sales. They're not focused on revenue or the bottom line. So they have more leeway in terms of how much money they get to make. And that is a situation that OnePlus isn't in right now. Sure, it was there. If you look back at the OnePlus 1 or the OnePlus 2, they undercut the industry by like several hundred dollars, right? That's what made them what they are now. So Realme is in that stage now, but OnePlus has effectively graduated to becoming like this major industry manufacturer. So they no longer have that advantage. But then again, it doesn't really matter, because what we're getting with the 8 Pro looks very similar to the Find X2 Pro, and that thing also costs like 900 euros. So it's basically the same hardware with Oxygen OS from the looks of it.
Yeah, and like, I mean, to add to that, you know, like the Realme X50 Pro is already, what, 48,000 rupees. The added, you know, $100 or so for, I don't know, a better design, better materials, better fit and finish, Oxygen OS, potentially wireless charging, Oxygen OS. That's a tax I think that a lot of people would be willing to pay for. And if you think about it, you know, Realme can offset a lot of their costs through their budget hardware, which anyway sells a lot more than the X50 Pro is ever going to sell. Yeah, OnePlus does not have budget hardware to offset costs.
It does not. And again, it's not that only OnePlus is paying the Qualcomm tax. Everyone in the industry is doing that, right? Everyone is basically building phones around Qualcomm's latest hardware. So it's not like it's just OnePlus that has to pay like exorbitant amounts of money for it. And if I had to suggest something between like $1,000 Samsung versus a OnePlus that costs the same amount and gives you Oxygen OS, I mean, it's not that much of a competition here. It's obvious that OnePlus built out Oxygen OS as like a differentiator. So let's see what the phone has to offer and if it goes up well against the S20. Because, I mean, it doesn't need to beat anything else. As long as it can measure up to the S20.
Exactly. You know, like price the same. Unless there's something that's like a deal breaker about the phone. Like the camera is absolutely trash. Or, you know, the phone doesn't perform that well. Or whatever be the case. I would hands down recommend the OnePlus over a competing product. Like they've built a great experience, they've built a brand around that experience, people are legitimately enthusiastic about it. I mean, look at us, we try out literally every phone under the sun and we keep coming back to the OnePlus because we just love that experience so much.
True.
It is. I mean, hardware has been commoditized several years ago. There's nothing different or exciting that you can do on the hardware front. So now all the differentiation comes to the software. And in that area, these guys have been dominating for the last 18 months. I mean, actually, on that note, I wanted to mention something. I was going back and using their back catalog, right? So even devices like the OnePlus 3T or the 5 or the 5T, right? They hold just fine in 2020. I used all phones for like a few minutes. And everything was running fine.
So Harish, like, since you've recently like tried out the entire back catalog of OnePlus, why don't you tell us what did you like? Which were your top three phones amongst all of those?
Well, the favorite has to be the 5T Star Wars because of its design. I love that sandstone white finish and that red accents. That was, they got a lot right with that device. That was the first time they switched to that 18:9 form factor.
And,
so the fingerprint
and the Kylo
thing.
Ren cover. And the Kylo Ren
cover. And the Kylo Ren cover. And the packaging. I mean, they nailed things with that.
It was on point.
Yeah, and the phone was also good. The phone was really good. They switched to the fingerprint at the back. They had that. I mean, the bezels were trimmed significantly from the 5. And it holds up just fine. I mean, it was running fine. I have friends that still use the 5T day to day and they don't have any issues. Second favorite would be the 7T. I still feel that the 7T is a kick-ass phone in 2020. And with the 8 series launching, I believe that the 7T would be a better bargain because that's going to be discounted.
Mm-hmm.
Third would be the McLaren series just because I'm a huge Formula One fan and they gave me a carbon fiber shard from one of their cars. So I'm like, okay, that sells it for me.
Fair enough. Akshay, as somebody who has not tried out the back catalog recently, which three phones stand out for you the most?
Yeah, so I would have to say that my favorite OnePlus phone from the catalog starts with the 3T. Just because it was the most distinctive looking phone they made. 3 or 3T? Or was it just 3T right away? I forget. But it was the phone that I could recognize from far, right? It had its own unique look. And it wasn't a copy of any device made by, let's say, Apple or Samsung or any other brand, right? It had its own identity. I really loved that phone. Then coming to the Star Wars edition, that being a massive Star Wars fan, I just had a different connect with that phone. Similarly, there was a Silk White edition as well. That one also I really, really loved, of the 60. Yeah, 60. That was just, I just loved the white and gold, the way it was done. But, and then lastly, my favorite was the 70 Pro. Not because of the way it looks, just because of the software, the way it's running. And every time I use that phone, it just feels right at home.
Yeah, I think for me, I absolutely agree with you over there. Much as I think that the 7T is probably a better value, the 7T Pro has been perhaps the best phone that I've used in a long time. It's been solid, reliable. It's never failed on me, which is a big criteria for me. You know, there's no app crashes, nothing like that. The battery life has been solid. The screen is beautiful. Camera could be better, but okay, fine. You know, it's not terrible. It's not terrible. It's just not pixel level, and that's the benchmark that I test phones against, hold phones against. So there's nothing else on the market that's really replicating the pixel experience. Akshay.
I wanted to add something. Sorry to interrupt you though. Just for the people who are thinking that this is a OnePlus podcast, if you think that we are just speaking praises for the 70 Pro, just read reviews from the three of us when the phone launched. We absolutely trashed that phone for what it was at launch because it didn't work and we didn't really like the design as much as we do today. The phone really grew on us. So don't think we are being biased about this.
You actually make a really good point there because OnePlus has...
Go read our reviews, then you'll know how opinions have changed.
I think that constant update cycle has played a big role. The camera was pretty bad at launch. Like, none of us really liked it, but then they improved it. They constantly improved on it. They've promised multiple years of Android updates and they've delivered on it as well. Like, there's historical precedence for actually delivering on that. So moving on from the 70 Pro, I think the 5T was pretty much the epitome of OnePlus. It was an affordable phone, built like a tank, has software that is still running beautifully. Like, I've got people in my family still using the 5T and they're completely happy with the phone. The camera was good enough, was pretty damn good for its time, and it still holds up reasonably well. Somebody who's using a 2 or 3 year old phone, they're probably not comparing their phone's camera to the latest flagship anyway. As long as it takes decent photographs for day-to-day use, they're pretty satisfied with it. And I think, like, as an honorable mention, third would probably go for the OnePlus X, which was something so wildly out there and so unique for its time. It was way ahead of its time as well. It had its more than its fair share of issues, but it was a really sweet experiment.
It was. I actually ended up writing just that. I said it was ahead of its time because when it launched, it did nothing for the brand. I mean, they even called it a failure and said they'll never work on a mid-range phone again. But then after a few years, it really started gaining a cult following, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's still a fair bunch of users for the phone out there. You keep coming across it. Yeah, I mean, you keep coming across it on Reddit and on forums, you know, like there's people still clamoring for the OnePlus X. It did help that it was pretty much the only OnePlus phone with a micro SD card, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, 16 GB is not going to cut it today, but wow, we had phones with like 8 GB and 16 GB of storage.
We still do, right? Well, maybe not now, but
yeah. I think like even at the entry level, like 32 has become the standard.
Standard, yeah. It has.
Okay, so that's enough of OnePlus for today.
That's been half of our show, man.
That's been half of our show, yeah. Like, that's why people sometimes say that we're the OnePlus podcast. But no, we're not. We are not.
I mean, it makes sense. There's nothing else launching. And these guys generally build out a lot of enthusiasm ahead of a launch. So there's a lot for us to talk about.
Yeah.
So,
but we talk about OnePlus all the time a lot.
Well, it's warranted. So I'm sure once the 8 series launches and we get our takes on it, then we'll move on to other phones and things.
Yeah, true.
Okay. So we are not a OnePlus podcast. We are also a gaming podcast. Akshay, gaming news of the week.
Yeah, my favorite part of the show. Well, not much has been happening in the gaming world apart from the fact that a lot of games have launched and Sony unveiled the DualSense controller. That's going to
yes!
be a controller that is paired up with the PS5 console. Now, before I get started on what the hell it is, what do you guys think about it?
I kind of like it. I mean, having never used a PlayStation before, well, having never owned a PlayStation before, I like the design. It is much better than the DualShock 4. I really did not like the way the controller felt. Primarily use the Xbox controller for playing on my PC. So this looks more in line with Microsoft's vision, I mean, with the design. And that two-tone finish looks really nice.
It looks beautiful. It looks futuristic. It's the vision of the future of consoles. It's what the next generation is supposed to look like.
I can see Dhruv's eyes light up the moment he talks about it. It's like the inner fanboy is coming out.
Yeah, it also gives us a glimpse into what the console might actually look like. So there's that. Like, they're going for a dual tone finish, which is pretty nice to see. I mean, for an out of the box experience, of course, there are third party or, you know, like those multiple variations that they keep coming out on. I love the feature set. Actually, I'll leave that to you to, you know, maybe guide us through it. But I just love how it looks. It's a new generation. It's the controller is what everybody harps on about the design of the console, but eventually, like, the console is just sitting in your media center. It's the controller which you interact with all the time, and that controller has to deliver new experiences. The controller has to look fantastic. It just has to give you a sense of next gen use, and the DualSense 5. The DualSense, not the DualSense 5. That's the DualShock 5, which everybody...
They should have called it DualSense 5 or DualShock 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, there's no number behind it? It's just the DualSense?
Nah, they just went from like DualShock 4 to DualSense.
Which makes no sense.
It actually does make sense. And actually, I'll leave that
DualSense
for you.
DualSense makes no sense. That's going to be a song.
But I only have like one inhibition right now, which is that the controller seems bigger than the previous generation. That is a huge issue for me with the Xbox controller. It's just too big for my hands. It's not comfortable for me. All the DualShocks so far have been fantastic in my experience. The six-axis, not so much. They sort of fixed that with the DualShock 3. And the DualShock 4 has been pretty damn good for me, like, other than the abysmal battery life. So that is something that I'm a little concerned about. But over to you, Akshay. Like, why does the DualSense make sense? What are those two senses that Sony's talking about?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with Harish that they've definitely taken inspiration from Xbox in terms of design. Although they did that with the DualShock 4 as well. They made the frame a little wider. Just because the PSC controller didn't feel as ergonomic and the PS4 one was right there. But this, by far, is my favorite design by Sony so far for their controllers because it's wider. I agree that you may not be may not like the wider design, but I like it, and you will get used to it once you spend time with it. Trust me, I felt the same. I have played with the original Xbox controller, and that was bigger than my face.
The Duke.
Yeah, so you'll get used to it. But the fact that what I like about this, it has improved haptic feedback. For example, this basically will work in games where where this vibration that you feel on your controller. It's very basic at the moment, but I think with the advanced haptic feedback they have, you may be able to developers may be able to incorporate better in their games. It's nothing new. We've seen it with the Elite controller, what Microsoft have done with the 1 and 2 both. So it's there, but it's the first for Sony.
Isn't it like HD Rumble like kicked up a notch?
Yeah, but I think it's far more advanced in the sense. I think there are more options for people to like. Right now, there's only one Rumble feature, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, before the Switch as well. But I think this is going to have variations within it.
Yeah,
like levels of feedback.
There are going to be different levels of feedback. Yes, something that's let's say you take a fall. And if it's a hard fall, the vibration will be much more stronger than a light fall, something like that, you know.
Yeah. So right now, like with the two Rumble motors, it's basically just an on and off. But since these are voice call actuators, so you'll get various degrees of rumble, like gradations of rumble. So you can simulate, you know, walking on gravel or driving on tarmac or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How many does the Xbox controller have? Because I like the feedback that I get from that.
I have no idea. I have not even looked into it. I just buy the stuff because I like it.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if Sony can build on that, that's a win. Wait, will this thing connect to the PC?
It will.
So, the reason why I think it's called DualSense is probably because, and it doesn't have a number, is because it will work with the PC. They don't want to confuse customers, and it's going to work with PS Now. Streaming service that is going to come, that's already on PC, and it's going to be probably more enhanced when the PS5 launches. So I think that's why they hadn't put a number to it. The other thing I really like is the adaptive triggers that the controller has. Again, nothing new. It's there on series on the Elite controller, and right now it's also on. It's also going to be on the Series X controller. So it's going to be industry standard now. So that means you'll have adaptive triggers on no matter which platform you're playing. What this means for gamers is that you'll be able to feel vibrations and again feedback on the triggers itself. For example, what Dhruv was mentioning earlier, if you race on a, let's say, on a dirt road, you can feel the rough texture of the road on your triggers. Similarly, if you're drawing a bow, you can feel that in the triggers. It's there on the Elite controller already, but I think it's going to be a little bit more advanced on the PS5, a little bit better.
Yeah, the varying tension in the controllers, you know, that's something I'm quite excited by. Like, say, like when you're playing a racing game, when you're understeering on gravel or oversteering, you know, the way that the how you have to rev harder in real life, you'll be able to change the game will change the sensation of the tension in the trigger based on that, which is fucking exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting, man.
I had no idea. Wait, so does it make sense to get something like an Xbox Elite controller?
If you want a similar experience, you can get the Elite controller too. Or I would wait for the Series X to launch, and the controller that comes with that will have similar features, will be a little bit cheaper as well, and will work with your PC.
Since you already have an Elite controller, like... Do you know if any of the PC games actually support these advanced features, or are these restricted just to the consoles?
Most PC games support it. It depends on the developer, honestly. But all first party games like Forza, like Sea of Thieves, all of them have support by default.
Okay.
Every Microsoft game has it, and for PC, I remember Yakuza had it. I don't know how and why, but it had it. Then I was playing Battlefield. A campaign, it had it on that. So I think it's just a minor tweak developers have to make while developing the games.
Mm-hmm.
For PC. So it's widely available on a lot of games.
Sweet.
Very cool.
Other features of the controller is something new and the Xbox controller does not have, is an inbuilt mic. Now, Currently, you can just plug up a headphone and talk to your friends while playing online. But now this has an inbuilt mic. For example, if you don't want to put a headphone on it, but still want to talk to your friends, you can do that.
But where would you get the sound out from? You'll still need to put something.
There's a speaker on the controller. Even the PS4, DualShock 4 controller has the speaker, a small speaker. And it will have that.
Be like all kinds of shit.
Yeah, you can see it right above the PS logo. There's a small air vent. Where
it's actually really cool, like especially in games like... what was the name? The one with...
Infamous?
No, Alloy, the... Not...
Horizon Zero Dawn,
yeah.
Yeah,
so,
you can hear. So the speaker is used in a way, let's say you're playing without headphones on the TV, right? But let's say you're near a certain object and it makes noise, you can hear it from your controller.
It's really immersive, you know, like especially like when you're firing off arrows, you know, the whoosh of, an arrow flying off your bow, that comes from the controller, and it just adds a bit of 3D realism to the experience. And I found that really cool.
Some game had audio logs as well. If you listen to an audio log, it will not play on the TV, but
yep,
it will play on the controller's speaker as well. Mm-hmm. So I really like little stuff like that.
Didn't Sony say something along the lines of 3D audio being one of like the core features of this new console?
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you're using headphones and home theaters. But for example, even if you're using a home theater, this little speaker can be used A, to communicate with people, and B, for little tidbits of stuff like this that you're probably not used to.
Interesting.
It has an inbuilt mute button as well. There's a mute button as well, so if you don't want people to hear you all the time, you can do that as well. And the best part about this controller, which is my favorite part, is the fact that the light behind the DualShock 4, it has gone. The DualShock 4 has a huge ass
light strip.
Notification light, I don't know what the hell they call it. Light bar, that's what they call it. Light bar. It draws the reason why the DualShock 4 has terrible battery life is because of that light. And now that is gone, it's just a little strip along the touchpad on the DualSense. So I like that.
But that's going to be kind of problematic because the light bar plays a big role for motion tracking in PSVR. And since the new controller's light bar, there is a light bar. It's just hidden behind the touchpad. I mean, they've not really clarified how that's going to work with previous generation PSVR games. Like, will they have to be recoded for some sort of support? Maybe there's some new controller coming out for PSVR.
Must be a new accessory. I have no idea, man. That's for them to figure out.
Maybe you'll buy a light bar accessory.
That could actually work since there is a USB-C port behind the controller.
For what reason?
For charging the controller.
For charging the controller.
Oh, I thought you just put batteries in it.
Oh, no.
No, that's the Microsoft thing.
Oh, okay. So, wait. These things don't need batteries.
No.
It's inbuilt battery.
Okay. I mean, they only
have Microsoft
has,
they have the charge and play kit that they sell separately. And they face a lot of issues for that when the DualSense got announced. Although, I want to ask you, what is your number one complaint with the controller? I have something that's very odd, and it's not from me, it's from my buddies, but I want to tell you because it's hilarious.
DualShock?
Yeah, DualSense. What,
with the DualSense?
Do you have any complaint? Yeah, do you have any complaints with it?
None whatsoever so far. Like, since they've already confirmed that it will have a headphone jack, like a regular headphone jack as well, I don't really have any complaints. I mean, on that note, I do hope that Sony finally supports third-party Bluetooth headsets. I would love to game with my 1000 XM4 once the XM4 comes out.
Wait, you couldn't connect Bluetooth headsets to it?
No,
you can't.
Even to the Xbox, you can't.
You can't?
No, since they're using proprietary Bluetooth to pair up with the controller. It's the same on the Switch. The Switch uses Bluetooth to pair up with its controllers, with the Joy-Cons, and the Bluetooth on that is shit.
Wait, how would you use a headset if you're playing on the TV and don't want sound coming out of the speakers?
You can plug in
no
a headphone
idea.
Jack. A headphone into the headphone jack.
Although... the number one complaint that I got to hear from people, from my buddies, was the fact that they can't eat and play with the controller since it's white. Most of it is white.
Why?
Yeah, man. Some friends of mine, like, when they're playing, they like to nibble on chips or whatever. They're like,
are they eating gravy or something? Like,
I don't know what they're eating, but they're just like, it's even in the US, people are complaining, I can't eat my Doritos and play the game anymore. Of course, Sony will have an all black version, but the way it looks right now, the white version, yeah, people are complaining that I can't eat and play.
But actually, it's not even just about eating. I mean, now that you've raised this point, I did think about it. The controller is bound to yellow over time, which is...
Yeah, in India especially.
Yeah.
I guess I'm gaming differently from everyone else. I'm gonna put like a big lace packet next to me next time I game.
But apart from that, the controller looks kick-ass. I like the design. I just want to see... And I've seen some incredible designs from fans, how they've been creative by adding different designs to it, like Mario and whatnot. So I'm excited to see how the controller will be in the future and the different variants that are going to be launching.
Yeah, I think it just leaves a lot of room for, you know, potential special color editions. Did you see the Death Stranding edition of the DualSense?
Yeah.
That was cute.
Although one thing that Sony has been very smart about is that they haven't showed the back of the controller. Now, There's a good chance it's going to have back paddle buttons. Like how the Elite controller has it and various third-party controllers. Basically, their buttons at the back.
So or there'll be a photo of a naked lady and it'll be tagged NSFW, so they're not willing to show that yet.
Yeah, that too, maybe.
Yep.
Yep. Basically, you can reassign these buttons to whatever you want from the controller, like a... And, you know, you want one of the back buttons to function as a square button or a circle button or R1, L1. You can do that. So they haven't showed that. I think it's been built. Maybe that's why it's a bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the back pedal buttons. And they haven't showed that. And I have a feeling it will be there. Because just recently they announced an attachment for the DualShock 4. Which basically adds back buttons to the old controller.
Yeah, but you know what, Akshay? Like, this is why I'm a little like irritated with Sony right now. This like stupid piecemeal approach, you know. You show off the controller, you don't show off everything about the controller. What is this nonsense?
Like, they're taking cues from OnePlus.
Like, they didn't even confirm the headphone jack. Like, the product manager confirmed it on Twitter that there is a headphone jack. Like, what the fuck, man? Like, you have a blog post about the controller. You're showing off the new controller. You don't talk about all the features.
Sony has always been bad at PR. We all know that from the PS3 days. And I think they're just... They're just not prepared for what's happening around the world and they have to release information. And probably it's just something they were not planning to do and they had to do because E3 is not happening. Nothing's really happening, right? So I think this was a very ill-planned release, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And they probably forgot to add it. the reason why they addressed it really fast was because... it would have been there would have been an uproar from the gaming community if there was no headphone jack, you know. Like,
but wait, I mean, this works in their favor, right? This slow trickle of information is great in terms of just getting headlines out.
Not really, man. I mean, yeah, it does. But what happens is that now that Xbox is beating their asses, they've been very upfront in terms of the Xbox Series X, and the more they delay, sure, I understand the mysterious aspect of it. But it also leaves a doubt inside that why are you delaying it so much? Is something wrong? Is something not going your way and you're just delaying it and scrambling for changes that you may have to announce in the last minute? So it's getting people worried more so than uninterested, I would say. So like, I am worried about the console.
Yeah, and it also leads to, you know, nonsensical discussions like, you know, where a Crytek developer is saying that, you know, it's a fantastic console to develop for, but then Daniel Rubino comes in and says that some devs are saying that it's really hard to develop for and they're having difficulty maintaining clock speeds. But then Jason Schreier comes back and says, oh, all of that is nonsense. Like, if you don't reveal the console, like, see, we're already in April. Technically, the console is supposed to go on sale in November. Pre-orders probably start like in September. That leaves us what, like 4 months for people to actually get hyped up about it. And at this point, whatever communication we've had, like even for the controller, like the people who were following it had to go and, you know, check or ask the product manager on Twitter to get confirmation on a basic feature. Like, they, Sony is definitely dropping the ball. At least get the, I mean, if you show off a feature, if you're showing off the controller, then at least be in-depth about that.
Show it off in full.
Exactly.
I think the number one rule of PR is that you need to control the narrative, and Sony really isn't. Because of what Dhruv just mentioned, that there's too many rumors floating around, and these are important rumors or leaks that are coming from important people. It's not even coming from some guy, dude working at a factory. It's just from developers who will support these systems in the next 7-8 years, right? And if they are worried, that means something is wrong. And if they're saying it's cool and it's great, then that means it's great, right? So there's a lot of mixed messaging going on that Sony is not really addressing, and it's working against their favor, not because of, as I said, uninterest, but because it's just people are getting worried. Is it good? Is it not good? Is it something that I want to spend my money on or not? Do I wait? Do I not wait? How expensive it's going to be? Stuff like that. People are just speculating a lot, and it's just working against them right now.
Yeah, just the confusion. There's starting to be a negative sentiment or a sentiment of worry, which is definitely not what they want going for themselves, especially considering that the console is, at least on paper, not as powerful as the Xbox.
Oh, well, I'm sure we'll know more in the coming weeks. I like how we ended up talking about a controller for 25 minutes. Very nice.
It's a great controller, man. I just wish the console is great as well. That's all I want.
It'll be fine. It's Sony. They're not going to fuck up a major console release.
They're not going to fuck up their biggest revenue stream.
They have fucked it up before with the PS3.
Yeah, but then, there's not a whole lot that they can fuck off.
They have fucked it up with the PS Vita. So they have a history of fucking up things.
No, I know, but then the hardware is sound. I mean, once the hardware is sound, there's nothing else that can actually go wrong with the thing, right? I mean, they're using the same base hardware as the Microsoft.
But they're taking a very different approach. Which is...
Sure. Cooling or in terms of managing
I know what the number one worry is. The reason why Microsoft doesn't sell well in Japan is because their designs have been atrocious. It's been always a big fucking box. Sony, on the other hand, has always made a sleek console because primarily in the Asian markets, people like to buy stuff that looks good on their desk or on their TV unit. So it's always been a sleek console. And I think they're having problems right now trying to achieve that sleek design because of the cooling and the heating issues that Arish just mentioned. And I think that's the reason why they're not showing off the console yet. I don't think it's ready.
But it's too late.
Be all fine. We're all good. My niffler says it's time to move on to something else.
Yeah, Harish is bored of all the gaming talk already.
But we have more gaming talk. Akshay, what have you been playing this week?
Wait, we'll alternate. We'll talk about the Pixel 4a and then switch back to gaming.
Okay, cool. Harish, okay. Pixel 4a, what's got you excited and what has
well,
got you not
excited? Well, because
there's
no Pixel 4 in India, right? I'm excited to see the 4a actually come here because it was dumb for Google to not realize that Soli wasn't going to work in India and just forego the launch altogether. But I'm excited because the 4a may actually turn out to be the first Pixel that may sell well. Because traditionally, if you look at the past 4 years of launches, it's only been the 3 and 3A, well, the 3A and 3A XL that sold in any decent numbers for Google. And that too just in the US because they did nothing in India. They launched at 30,000. Did they launch at 30 or 40,000?
40,000.
Yeah, they launched at 40 and 45,000 and that was a non-starter. But with the 4A, they have the chance to roll out a device that has decent hardware and also offer that excellent Google mid-range camera. And if it works out for them, they could possibly break into the Indian market.
Harish, tell me something. Like, would you still recommend a 40,000 rupee Pixel 4a? I mean, cameras have gotten better, software experiences have gotten better. That differentiator really isn't there anymore. From the leaked images, it looks like such a generic phone. The design is so, for the first time, I've stood by even the most esoteric Pixel designs, but this one looks meh.
It does. And I don't know what's going on with Google hardware because they built this line of minimalist hardware around all their products. And then now it just feels like someone is just dialing in their designs. They're like just going to the Pixel 2 and they're like, okay, we'll make a few tweaks on this design and they'll sell another phone. So yeah, that's not particularly interesting. But then you also have to consider that in markets like the US, there's no other phone that gives you that much value.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, here it's going to be very difficult if they get the pricing wrong like they did last year. But in the US, that 3A is like such a kick-ass phone for that $300, $400 price segment, right? So that's what I want them to do this year. Instead of just pricing it absurdly high in India, just be somewhat aggressive, like how even Samsung has been this year.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're aggressive, I still see them winning out, because the only other Android One brand is Nokia, and Nokia hasn't delivered anything meaningful in like a year. So there's still that potential for that 25,000-30,000 segment where there's no device with clean software.
I feel that they've really lost the momentum. Like, till last year, the Pixel brand had developed, you know, a bit of momentum behind it. There was brand recognition in India. People were willing to take a gamble on it. 1 year later, especially with all the conversation around the Pixel 4 not coming in, people, I don't think they're willing to spend 40,000 odd or even higher on such a basic phone.
I mean, if it's going to cost 40,000, it'll be dead on arrival in India. They cannot market a phone with the 730 when there's like the Realme X50 that gives you the 865 for like under 40,000. So there's no way that they're going to sell it for 40,000. I mean, they will sell it for 40,000 because
they will
Google,
sell it for 40,000.
But there's no way they'll get any sales if they sell it at 40,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel that they should at least now rethink their strategy, because if it doesn't work for them this year, it is looking likely that they'll just pull the plug on the Pixel series, right? Because Google is known for killing off products that don't do well, and the Pixel series has done nothing for them.
That would be a shame.
Yeah.
I mean, I genuinely love the cameras on the Pixel phones, and we still use the 3A XL in office, and it can take some incredible product shots as well. Out of the blue, to be honest. And I would be excited for the 4A, but not at $40,000. It won't have face unlock for some reason, because the Soli chip won't be there. I mean, it will be, as Dhruv said, a very basic phone that does not warrant that price tag. Just for the camera, we've mentioned previously, just get a standalone camera instead, and, you know, and especially with OnePlus coming around, and I don't even know if 4A is going to come to India. I mean,
no.
With what's happening around, there's no news of it even launching ever, to be honest. I mean, it's going to be just another Pixel 4 that will never launch in India.
Realistically, I would pay 20,000 for the 4A XL, and that's anything above that. I mean, if you really wanted to push it, 25.
For the 4A XL, 20,000 is a bit low. We're assuming it will be like $400, right?
But isn't the rumor that there is no 4A, 4A XL? Like, there's just one 4?
Oh, just this one, right.
Yeah, the 5.8 inches. Maybe that small form factor might be, a reason for people to buy the phone. But then again, 40,000 is asking too much, and we don't even know how the phone is going to be and how long it will last.
I know, but I'm doing my 1 year take on the 3A XL, so I switched to it and I've been using it for a few days now, and it still is fine. At the time, I wasn't sure about the mid-range hardware holding up, but they've done a brilliant job on the software. And I've recommended this thing to a lot of family in the US, and they love their phones. It's a hard sell in India for sure, because we have so many devices that have better value. But I still feel that there is a chance for Google to still figure out a strategy for India, for the Indian market. Because, I mean, the brand has great cachet, right? The Google name has great pull in India. So it's not like they have to brand their phones or do something like that. I mean, all they need to do is price it somewhat aggressively.
Reasonably. I mean, 30,000 would also be, you know, fine, you know. Okay, 30,000, I can pay that much for like a superior camera experience, but 40,000 is pushing it.
Yeah, 40 is
no. I mean, as somebody who has to recommend a phone, the imaging is pretty much the only factor at this point. Sure, there are software updates, but like most manufacturers, in fact, like I've been doing a bunch of updates recently, and Realme's been really good with software updates.
Yeah.
Monthly security patches. Most of their phones are on latest software, on the latest version of Android now. They've been doing a pretty damn good job. And when, you know, a new entrant can do such a good job, and the software experience is generally pretty damn decent across the board. Stock Android isn't as big a factor as it used to be.
No, it really is not anymore.
It's not like something that you need to look out for now. You have skins that are actually really good.
Yeah, I mean, Realme UI is actually very decent. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a bad skin. But let's see, I still feel like Google could do something with its phone series just because it's Google and it's straight from the maker of Android. So I don't know, feel that there's potential, but then Google seems to somehow find ways to squander it year after year.
Yeah. Oh, well. Okay.
Yeah.
So we did not realize it, but we're like, what, 55 minutes into our conversation already? That is crazy. And we thought we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Time flies when you're talking about gaming controllers.
Yeah.
Anything, man. With the three of us and we're talking, we're just talking. We don't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Wasn't that like one of the initial thoughts behind like naming the podcast like Three Buddies or whatever, like something like that?
Yeah. I mean...
Anyways, before we head towards closing today's episode, Akshay, do you want to quickly run us through the latest in the world of gaming, the stuff that you've been playing, stuff you're excited about, and your quiz, the customary Akshay quiz?
We've already done that for the OnePlus 8, haven't we?
We have.
We did.
Yeah, so
haven't we done that twice now?
We did.
No, we'll go with the latest one and we don't have to do it again.
Okay,
so
fine.
Nothing, no quiz this week. But in the gaming world, one of my childhood games got a remake and launched this Friday. I got the game a day before its release, so I can talk about it a bit, but I don't want to spoil it too much. Final Fantasy VII Remake launched for the PlayStation 4 on Friday last week. And I will say that it is the greatest game of this generation, hands down. And this includes games like Spider-Man, God of War, Uncharted, Last of Us. Well, Last of Us was previous gen, but this gen, Final Fantasy VII Remake is probably the most influential RPG story-based game you will play and you will remember for the rest of your life. I can guarantee that to you. Even for newcomers, it doesn't matter.
And to give our listeners some perspective, that's high praise for a game which is actually a remake. And the original came out in what, 96, 97?
96. It was
96?
Great. Yeah, 96.
And it 96, was...
Japan, 97.
Yeah, and it was perhaps the most influential game of its time at that point as well. And the game holds up even today.
Wait.
Yes.
What is the premise?
Can't talk about it, to be honest. But then, basically, you are kind of a eco... Not terrorist, but a warrior that is trying to save the planet. There's an evil corporation that uses Mako. Mako is what powers the planet's life. But this evil corporation harnesses that power to, create stuff. I can't talk about what. To create things, to power the city of Midgar. And it's also used as a drug by people they consume, and they get addicted to it. There's a lot of backstory behind it. But you really don't need to know that to play this game. I can only say that it is not what the world is about. It's the personal stories that you experience with Cloud Strife, with Barrett, and then Tifa, and all these characters. They are just perfectly molded characters that you will ever see in a video game. I'm playing the game in Japanese. I was playing it in English. I just couldn't feel the connect. I think the voice actors were terrible in English, but in Japanese, it feels like... It just feels like a movie that you're living. I'm already 20 hours into the game, and man, that game has some emotional moments, some funny moments. The gameplay is super tight. You can just switch characters on the fly. It's a semi-open world game. It's not a massive open world game like Witcher that you have to go side missions, do side missions, etc. Whatever. They're like 5-6 side missions, and then you're on the story. Fabulous looking cutscenes. I would say I have not reviewed the game. My review should go live tomorrow, maybe. I would give this game a 9.5 out of 10. 0.5, I think the reason why I'm holding that back is because I haven't finished the game yet. So I can't really say much.
But wait, this is a remake.
I was just coming to that. So it's not a beat, beat by beat remake of the original game. Yes, there are a lot of similarities, like, you know, like the train station, like the reactor. They all have taken inspiration from the original game. But in this game, they've added a few things that lead up to towards the end of the story. For example, once in the demo, you blew up the Mako reactor, right? I can talk about this now. But after that mission, you see how the city is responding to what you have just done. Like, you know, you've just blown up a reactor, but the city is in turmoil, and you don't get to see that in the original game because, of course, it was so many years ago. But this time, you get to walk through the city. You see people crying, dying. It is just—it's a very emotional experience, and I would recommend everyone to experience this game at least in their lifetime. Or if you can't buy the game, you don't have a console, watch your favorite YouTuber stream it or watch it on YouTube. You really need to experience the story.
Heck, like, if you don't want to spend like $60 on this, I mean, I think the original still stands up. Go ahead and just play the original on every Sony platform, and you can easily get it on the PC as well. Heck, like, just emulate it if you must, you know. The original game still stands up.
There's a remastered edition as well, so you can play that as well. I would recommend playing that.
But wait, hey, so this game isn't there on Windows?
Not 7. It was a PlayStation exclusive game back in the day, and the remake is also an exclusive right now. The original and the HD remaster is available on other platforms. Okay, I think we've lost Rupa. It's fine. I think I'll just wrap up this episode and end it as well for Dhruv. So yeah, I mean, the game is available on different platforms, the original game and the remastered version, but 7 Remake is exclusive to PlayStation right now, but will be coming to Windows next year and Xbox as well.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's our episode. I mean, Dhruv is not here. He's supposed to do the outro, but I guess I'll do it for him right now. That was the last episode or the latest episode of the Untitled Gadgets podcast.
Wait, that's not the last one, man.
No,
that
the
was
latest.
The last one for this week.
Yeah, yeah. And we will see you next week.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'm sort of hosting. But yeah, I mean, we'll have some more news on the OnePlus 8 series and a few other things that might get announced.
All right,
see ya.
Jabberwocky.
Bye.